Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Another exciting show. Today, we are going to be talking about God. And a lot of people don't believe in God. Apparently, 5% of the US population currently does not believe in God. And I remember seeing an episode of Family Guy not too long ago where Brian revealed that he was an atheist. And he was exposed by Meg. And apparently, the whole town just started throwing stuff at him and destroying his life and stalking him, that kind of thing, burning the origin of species and giant book-burning piles, that kind of thing. And I thought to myself, man, don't people get really, really uppity when they're trying to prove something that they can't prove and get angry at people when they don't know what exactly they're getting angry about? Ignorance is a dangerous thing, a very dangerous thing, especially when it concerns the divine. If you know nothing of it, you know nothing of the love, know nothing of the creativity, or anything of that nature, or if you more specifically know its oppositional forces too, you might find yourself in a big, deep pit of trouble. Walter Willis is my guest from walterwillis.com, the gracious God. Walter, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Vinny. Welcome.
Can you tell me a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
I'm retired, and I don't do anything. I just have my airplane parked in the backyard. I have a hangar and a private airstrip I live in. My wife has her horses, and I recently joined the volunteer fire company about 3 years ago, and I'm just retired.
Okay, so you don't have a website, you don't do anything, no research, whatever?
No, I don't really, I retired from TSA, as a supervisor, and before that I was a police officer, and kind of a boring life, really.
Okay, so why are you on the show today? Do you have anything to talk about that perhaps people might be interested in listening about?
You mentioned something about, you're talking about belief in God or faith in God.
I just Googled your name and it might not be you.
Well, no, it's not. what I want to talk about is extraterrestrials.
Ah. Well, in some cases, a lot of people might confuse the two, but go on.
Yeah, they do, and I've been told that what I saw was devils, and they're evil, and they're all these things. I'm thinking the Bible has mentioned something about a war in heaven between the good angels and the evil angels, and I think people assume because you see an alien that it's automatically a demon or evil. And I keep thinking, well, there's good and there's evil in everything, every walk of life.
Yeah, there's up, there's down, there's left, there's right, there's good, there's evil. There's the whole universe is a one constant self-reinforcing duality.
That's it. And you just stole my quote.
Really?
Yeah, I use that reference often, and I try to explain to people that God created light and darkness and wet and dry and high and low, left and right. God is creator of everything, including creatures not of this planet.
Well, we always think about that, and this is where the religious sentiment starts to get incredibly upset, because, I don't know, is there a mentality within religion that we are the only planet that has life on it, and it's just us on this planet and God, and the rest of the universe is just completely empty and devoid of life? That's the religious idea, isn't it?
It is, and I feel sorry for the ones that are so stuck on that. You say 5% don't believe, and I think it was 6% believe that the lunar landing was a fake and it was done in Hollywood. So, you know, there's a certain percentage of people out there that, that you're never going to convince them otherwise.
Well, I don't know. I think it's because they haven't been brainwashed into believing the truth. Instead, they've been brainwashed into believing a lie. Brainwashing's addictive, after all. And as soon as you can brainwash somebody in any way, shape, or form, you can basically choose what to program them with.
Isn't it kind of funny, Vinny, that, you know, the so-called Christian communities, there's a whole bunch of different fragments, and even the Muslims, they have their factions on one side or the other. And if you don't seem to adhere to exactly the way the doctrine is written in their particular view, they kill each other in the name of their creator.
Well, I've not seen a terribly large amount of that. Like, for example, Muslims and Christians in Auckland, New Zealand, first world country, never seen them or any of them kill each other over their religious beliefs. But I have seen places where people have been suffering starvation, have been suffering bombing, have lost many, many loved ones for no apparent reason. And then I see demagogic type religious leaders use that suffering and use that pain and use that fear to motivate all of these people and manipulate them into fulfilling that particular person's idea of what the real good world should be. Usually the people who are leading religious cults are, what are they after? They're either after sex, money, or power, usually all three.
That's kind of funny you said that. It brings back memories. I'm 65, so I've heard a lot and seen a lot, so someone told me, whenever you never trust a cop or a preacher, I thought to myself when you said that.
Yeah, I think it's because both cops and preachers are trained to lie. It comes with the territory.
Yeah, well, I know some of them do. And you can't say all cops, you can't say all preachers. But
oh, that's true, it's true. Well, it's kind of like, I don't know. Sometimes, like desalinization, for example, the whole idea of getting the salt granules out of the sea, that's very similar to how a person should look at say, the law or religion or most things, essentially. You have this enormous ocean, and you only have these small granules that you actually really want out of it, and it does take time to process, and nothing can't blanch anymore. That's what I've discovered.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, a good parallel description.
In your life, well, let's just start with you then. Whereabouts were you born?
In Wilmington, Delaware.
Mm-hmm. And what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my mother worked when she was born in Poland, and she came here to try to get away from the Nazi invasion. And my grandmother and two other siblings were in Calgary. They were allowed to go to Calgary, immigrate. And then my grandfather came a year later. Then they moved to the Delaware area. Then my mother joined the Army, Women's Army Air Corps, as she was a sergeant there, and served in the Southwest. And then after I was born, we lived on a farm for about 10 years in the middle of Delaware on an old farmhouse built in 1684, an old farmhouse. And growing up on the farm was kind of unique, and I kind of had a strange incident that took place on the farm that I didn't know back in 1950-something. I didn't know what it was, but I thought, I didn't believe in ghosts until I seen them up close. I thought they were ghosts. Later, as I got older, of course, people talked about gray aliens, and the pictures that they were describing and showing on the media was exactly the same thing I saw next to my a solid state from translucent to solid, floating towards my bedside, and I saw three of them, and I thought that was really strange, you know, and then later I realized that they were not ghosts per se; they were what people refer to as grays.
And that was your first experience. How old were you?
Oh, 5 or 10, somewhere in that area. It's been a while, Vin. That was.
Did it only happen?
I'll never forget. And I didn't.
Did it only happen that one time, or has it happened several times since then?
That's the only time I got up close and personal with them and had them actually telepathically communicate, you know, to me. And they could understand what I was thinking. That's what was really scary. Because I was
they communicated.
Thinking that
what
they
did
were,
they say?
Huh?
What did they say to you?
Well, I was empathetically thinking that they were ghosts from the farmhouse that was, you know, people that lived there before. And I used to go out and take care of the gravesite, cut the grass, fix the fence, set up the stones, you know, and plant flowers and things like that. And I thought they were coming to thank me, you know, for taking care of the gravesite. So I thought, you know, that's kind of nice to pay a visit to the kid, you know. And I was just a young dummy. But they actually appeared in the other room, and something made me wake up, ESP or something, and I looked to the left and I saw... I kept staring in the darkness. We had no electric or running water. I kept staring in the other room for some reason. Then I saw them materialize, you know, get more solid from transparent to translucent and solid as they floated towards me side by side, tall one in the middle, and two little grays, identical grays on either side. And that was a strange event because I felt empathy for. I thought they were like ghosts that had been in a fire because their heads were swollen and their eyes were big, and they were skin and bones. They were like really frail looking, like they had, you know, lost their muscle from being, you know, burned up or something. And I reached over to touch one on its left shoulder next to my head, and because I was asking it, "Are you okay?" I was thinking, are you okay? Are you okay? And I looked up at the middle one, which I thought was the father, and I said, hey, what happened to you guys? You know, are you okay? Are you feeling any pain? And apparently they answered me in a thought. And the thought came back, everything's going to be okay. Don't touch me. Just lay back down and go back to sleep. And I did. I laid back down, covered my head, and shook like a leaf, like a scared bunny. And then I felt this funny feeling like I was being thrown out of an airplane or something, and then I blacked out. Next morning, I normally was the first one up in the morning, and I heard my grandmother calling, you know, for me to get up. We had a wood stove. That's all we had for, you know, cooking, and I was the one to get the wood stove going. So I get called over and over again. She woke me up, and I went downstairs. I met her in a halfway through the house and downstairs, and she looked at my face and wanted to take me to the doctor's. So I had a big burn on the side of my face, left side. And I asked her if she had seen anything or heard anything strange last night, and she said no. So I didn't tell her a thing. I didn't tell anybody a thing until this past couple of years. I decided to write all this stuff down. It's one of the things when you get to be 65, you don't care what people think, if they believe you or not. And you get to the point where you can either take it to the grave with you or you can share it with your children and grandchildren. So I took the time to write all this stuff down, my strange life I had. And I
what have you you've written a whole book about your life.
No.
Since this incident, have you been researching into extraterrestrials? You found out a lot more about them? Or?
Well, there's a lot of strange things in my life. I thought I sent you a copy of that 4-page report. I don't like to write, and I just kind of condensed it into an outline and passed it on to my daughter. And I just thought it would be something I need to pass on so she's aware, and the grandkids are aware of. There's a strangeness out there that most people probably aren't aware of. And I'm hoping that other people will come forward and also tell what they know before they die.
Well, this is a common theme coming towards the end of life. It's not entirely dissimilar. It's sort of like a conspirator tying loose ends is similar to a man who's coming to a person of any kind, really, coming to the end of their life and wanting to, again, tie up those loose ends. So there's nothing unsaid. You know what I mean?
The same thing. They don't care how they look as much. They don't care. All they really care about is passing on what they know to the people they care about.
I was actually thinking about this the other night, about what will be there when I'm gone. Will I have made a difference? Did I live the right kind of life? Was I a good man? Those kind of things are weighing on my mind now because I had a feeling yesterday that I was going to die soon. I just want to describe the feeling, and it made me burst into tears. I don't know what it was. There's nothing going on in my life right now that would make me feel fear or feel like I'm about to die or anything. And yet this massive feeling washed over me with it. And I kept saying to myself, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And I think that it was because the only discomfort I have is I haven't accomplished what I need to while I'm here yet. Do you sort of know what I mean? And that's that would be the only regret if I were to leave this earth today. We'll talk about this more after the break. Walter Willis is my guest when we're talking about extraterrestrials and obviously coming to the end of your life and whatnot. We'll be right back at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. You can also join us in the chat room there. Just go for an internet search, Vinny Eastwood Chat. Should be easy enough to find. We'll be right back.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert, give me a dessert, give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick, give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary, yeah, give me a whiskey sour, yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop. 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand. You certainly won't feel like you're home. They say that New Zealand's beautiful, and I don't know because by the time I got over the jet lag, I had to go. And it seems to me if you're going to travel for 19 hours to another country, when you get there, they should have the common courtesy to speak another language. I did not fly all this way to hear English again.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live in English on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My special guest today is Walter Willis. Walter, are you still there?
I am. That was so funny. Thank you for playing that one.
Yeah. You do like to have a wee bit of a cackle. After all, in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts.
Yeah, really.
The lighter side of genocide I like to enjoy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I was saying before the break, I had this kind of strange sensation, or might have been like a regret prediction. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, I thought my life was going to end before its time, and I wouldn't accomplish all that I want to while I was alive. And wondering whether or not if I disappeared all of a sudden, whether anybody would notice, or if I was gone for 50 years or something, whether or not anybody would ever remember me. And I was just thinking, man, I must have some real kind of narcissistic ego type complex or something, because I do want to kind of be remembered. I don't know why. Sort of like Bender on Futurama. There was an episode where they crashed on this ancient Egyptian planet, basically. And Bender enslaves everybody, and he's so obsessed with being remembered that he makes them build a giant statue of epic proportion, kills half the workers, brutally enslaves them, just so that he can be remembered, kind of thing. And I was just thinking, man, it's really insane, sociopathic, to kind of think of yourself like that.
Well, Vinny, I had to take a psychological test twice in my life. And one time the report came back, all I could read was the bottom line, which was, your report came back that was glowing. That was back when I was a young man, about 21 years old. The last time I had to do it for a police department at age of 50, and my report came back 90% sane and 10% crazy. And I'm thinking, okay, what I'm telling you sounds crazy, but they keep telling me I'm not. So, and as far as, ego and narcissistic and... No, I lack ego. if I had any ego, I would have accepted all the offers from everybody, from the President Nixon to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs to represent the U.S. in the Olympics, and I turned it down. Or I would have taken Bruce Lee's offer that I'd fight Chuck Norris in a private match. Even he offered to give me his personal black belt. No, I don't have an ego. And I don't have a narcissistic mannerism about me. But it does sound crazy.
I was more saying that I do. And I'm concerned about it, very. And somebody told me this yesterday, commenting on one of my videos. He said, yeah, Vinny, it's a shame about your NPD. And I was like, what is NPD? Looked it up. Narcissistic personality disorder. Yeah. One of those many made up disorders that psychiatrists voted on with no scientific evidence or backing or double blind testing or anything like that, so they can sell incredibly dangerous drugs that in a lot of cases will probably just be a hell of a lot more dangerous than just being a narcissist who loves himself.
No, yeah, and also I turned down, like, the FBI tried to recruit me as a special agent back in 1970 also, and I turned them down. Like I said, I don't have that problem with being interested in myself and my ego. And in fact, I'm more selfless than selfish. And I volunteer for everything around here that I can help my neighbors with, So, no, I don't suffer from that. And I don't really care if people believe me. I wrote this down primarily, these four pages, for my kids, grandkids.
Have you by chance got the four pages there?
I do, and I should have sent them to you in advance.
Well, just grab them and read them out, mate. It'd be better to hear it from the horse's mouth, don't you think?
If you like, I could do that. And by the way, New Zealand is the epicenter for blue-eyed, blonde-haired, type A-positive humans on Earth. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Well, I am a blue-eyed, blonde-haired human, but I didn't realize I was at the center of anything.
I am, too, and I thought that's... I always wanted to go to New Zealand. I'll just cover real briefly, okay, because we don't have a lot of time here.
We've got 2 hours.
Oh, we do? Okay, good. Okay, another thing that happened in 1959 in Wilmington, Delaware, I used to go to Canby Park swimming, and I saw flying saucers, about a dozen of them, and I told my mother, which was, Air Force sergeant back when she was in the service, and she said I was crazy and didn't want me to tell the police, so she finally let me call the sergeant that evening, and he said he had no other reports of seeing flying saucers. The next day, I think it was the next day or the day after, I was at my friend's house around the corner, and his father answered the door, and there were two uniformed Air Force personnel, a sergeant and an officer, that wanted to speak with me in private, and they relinquished the room for a private, you know, talk. Would you believe that I had my first look at a man in black? You know, you ever hear the story about the men in black?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, my friend John Eisen told me to watch the movie Men in Black, and I'd already seen it, and he says, watch it again. Like, try to instill something very important with me. Go on.
Yeah, I really got the interview, the third degree, from the officer and the sergeant and the guy in black. The guy in black wouldn't answer my question when I got right up at his face. I said, oh, you with, because I had to wait for him to come in. I said, you with the FBI, the CIA, some other agency? And I was only like 13 years old. And this guy just totally ignored me like I wasn't even there. And he had dark glasses on, the hat, the whole bit. Had a steno pad with a pencil, and he was taking notes or pretending to take notes. It was a weird environment, you know, telling the officer and the men in black and the sergeant what I had witnessed. And they went through their routine of, you know, telling me, trying to get me to change my story. So finally I got fed up with them, and I parroted back one of the officers' suggestion that it might have been something normal. And I looked up and I saw the guy in black shake his head left and right like, no, that's a phony. He doesn't believe. You haven't convinced him yet. So I came up with a better story, and he finally folded his pad and left. And on the way out, my mother followed with the officer, and then the sergeant was out. I grabbed him on the arm. I asked the sergeant, I said, Sarge, I said, look, level with me. I said, they're going, just level with me. Tell me they're not Russian aircraft. I saw high-tech stuff, because they were darting around in the sky like you wouldn't believe. Stop, turn on a dime. And he tell me the government's well aware of what's going on. So he told me, he said, but, you know, you got to keep this to yourself. And the government will soon tell the American people all about it. Well, that's 1959, Vinny. How long are they going to wait?
Well, it depends how, I don't know. The guy down at the bottom, the man in black, he was the one who told you that it would be happening soon?
No,
in my experience, it doesn't matter what organization you're going to work to, whether or not it's McDonald's or Vodafone or anything. The people at the bottom are not told anything that the people up the top really know.
And I know that. I mean, I was a supervisor, and I had, like, management status at the TSA. And my boss was retired from, he's a Fulbright colonel from the Pentagon. He did secret stuff, you know, analyst. And I know management even treated our own people like they were just war dogs. You know, we did us against them. It was like not us against terrorists. It was us against our own employees. It was a lot of, we created a lot of discontent by having that attitude.
So trying to keep them in line, eh?
Yeah,
command structure, hierarchy.
That's what he said. He said, you let them backbite, he says. The more they're fighting each other, the more ability we have to control them. I thought that was uncalled for.
Well, it depends what your objective is. Is your objective to make sure that your employees are free, independent, and capable of doing their job without you, so you become out of the job? Or is your goal to make sure that they need you?
Exactly.
So that you stay employed forever?
That's exactly.
So, similar to a politician.
It's a power thing. Here's something about your dream you had about, you know, leaving your mark on Earth, doing something, you know, valuable before you depart. And we all get to depart eventually. Once I hope so. I got to tell you something, Vinny. A lot of people, I believe, have been visited, abducted, or whatever you want to call it, by creatures not of this world. You may have been one of them, and that's why you're in this position where you're trying to gather and disseminate information around the world to wake people up. If you were, you probably 90% of the people that were taken and indoctrinated somehow in a subconscious way, you're probably not even aware of it.
Well, I don't know if I buy that, because the whole idea is all of these things that have happened to me in my life, like let's take my parents, for instance. Dad multimillionaire, created 400 different types of forklift tires, solved the problem of traction that forklifts had in the freezing works, traveled all over the world. Big guy, right? Huge speaker, entrepreneur, the whole thing. So I got that, and you have a look at my background and the work that I've done in this kind of sector so far, and it's very much in line with how my dad's creativity worked. But there's another element to me, and I think this comes from my mother, a nurse, so she, and a poet, and very, very kind of spiritually and slightly psychically aware of stuff. So I have those two elements, and I think that they've worked perfectly within me so that I can be in this very specific position. However, having the ability to be here is irrelevant, because it's my experiences, not my genetic makeup, that got me here. It's being shafted three times in a professional capacity when I was a number one salesman, and my employers feeling threatened by me. And getting rid of me three times in a row. That's what got me out.
Well, you know, there's a clash between psychological thinking of nature versus nurture. And it may be equal, it may be out of balance, but you do have your parents to thank for a lot of your genetic predisposition.
Mm. Well, and also... they were always with me, or at least for the first 10 years of my life, and I got to see these things that they did. You know, my dad was really into birds and ornithology, and sure enough, I'm into that as well. But for the second 10 years of my life after the divorce, I kind of had to start accumulating father figures, and I was a really violent kid, and in fact, I was really violent and not well adjusted at all up until maybe I think maybe the age of 15 was the last time I laid a hand on somebody. And I have this kind of, you know what a grudge feels like? It's like drinking a poison and expecting the other person to die from it. And I feel all of these times in my life where I've ever felt unfairly or unjustifiably treated, I remember them, and I remember them so intensely. And I've tried to come to terms with them. I've tried to say, oh, well, these was part of the building blocks of my life. Without those terrible traumas, I would not be the wonderful person who can survive that kind of crap today. But it doesn't change the fact that I still feel really raw about it.
Yeah.
And it's happened my entire life. And any time when I've had things stolen off me, been assaulted for no reason or fired from a job, you know, any time where I've had this intense injustice, it weighs on my heart and it accumulates there. I've been unable, try as I may, no matter what I've been doing or who I've been talking to or how I go about it, I cannot get rid of that heavy feeling on me, like the world's just not fair.
Yeah, I feel for you, because at the age of 10, to have a divorce in your household would tend to be the basis for narcissistic behavior and thinking. And that is one of the primary causes of narcissistic thinking. And so you're struggling with that. And one of the best cures for that, of course, is self-awareness, number one. And then to go out and do what you're doing, which is helping other people.
But the other part is, am I just helping other people because I get something out of it, you know?
Yeah, you do get something out of it. You get self-satisfaction of feeling that you're accomplishing something good in the world and that you're necessary and not just, living for your own ego.
Well, there may be some who would disagree with you, but I actually want to discuss this further, because I want to reach some sort of a resolution about this, because I fear the monster I might become had I not kept myself in check. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Yeah.
hours in talk radio. It's the Vanilla Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guest, Walt Willis, talking about extraterrestrials, and I seem to have hijacked your time on the radio here talking about my narcissistic self. How funny is that?
That's so funny. You know, you think you're not doing something, Vinny, but you really are. And by trying to wake up the world to the truth, that's the most anyone could ever do. And you've got an audience that are being educated now on things that they half of them probably don't even believe. But at least you're telling people.
Well, is that part of it, though? You got to say it, even in a room full of people who won't listen. You just have to open your mouth, say, and do something, anything, just to make sure that you're justified that, hey, at least I didn't do nothing. And what I find interesting is that I'll go out and I'll do a protest, Walter. And like the other day, for instance, I went out in front of the New Zealand Army headquarters, and I had a 100-watt megaphone, just me, talking at the building, pointed at the building, telling them that heroin trafficking is the reason why New Zealand soldiers are now deployed in Afghanistan. And then I get a criticism from somebody saying, you forgot to mention the government monopoly on force and banking system and all of that. Hold on. I didn't forget to mention that. You didn't even show up to say it.
Yeah, you know, that sums up my belief, too. And I applaud you for that. That's Alex Jones-type courage. And a lot of people now are starting to listen, with Glenn Beck, Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh. There's a lot of people on the radio talking, and even though you think people aren't listening or they think you're off the wall or far-fetched, you know, talking crazy, keep telling people, because your audience will grow and they'll be more informed, better informed, as time goes on. So I applaud you for doing what you're doing.
Well, the truth is its own motivation. It's a thirst thing, almost like a compulsion. If you've been bitten by the truth bug, essentially, the poison will course through your veins if you don't figure out some way to release it.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you a little story, a quickie. In 1950s, mid-50s, my father bought a new Buick, and we went to the farm every Sunday. And I'm going to tell you this because it kind of relates to that inner voice that you're probably feeling, telling you to do what you're doing. It's motivating you, and you don't even know why you're doing it. But I can tell you what I think it is. On the way to the farm, you know, I believe aliens are real, and I think they have a way to put thoughts in your head like words. And I was being told to lay down on the floor with my back to the front seat, and I'm arguing with myself psychologically, you know, like a voice within my head arguing with a voice within my head. And so I wouldn't do it. I said, no, I'm not. Why would I want to do that? I'm not going to do that. So then finally, after the third refusal to lay down on the floor with my back to the front seat with my inner voice telling me to do it, I had this sharp pain in my stomach, and it doubled me up and it kind of knocked me down on the floor, and I complied. Within a minute, we T-boned a car on the highway and took out two gas pumps, and everybody went to the hospital but me, because I was laying on the floor with my back to the front seat. That's like that's the kind of message that you're probably receiving to do what you're doing.
I have received something similar like that. I used to be involved with this. I now realize he was a total psychopath, like a real clinical one. And you know how we talked about cult leaders before, how they're after money, sex, and power? This guy's all three, and he was getting it too, even from me. I was a bit younger and maybe a bit more naive than I am now. And these people were violent, dangerous people, involved with gangs, things like that. And I was walking down to my car. I wasn't going to go see him or anything like that, but this voice told me, get in your car really, really quickly, you know. Get that key in the lock, open the door, and get back in as fast as you can. Seconds, you know, just whoosh, whoosh, boom, boom, and I'm in the car. And I was like, was that about? And about a week or two later, I needed to get in that car really, really quickly because these fracks were about to freaking kill me.
Yeah, Vinny, somebody's been watching over you.
And that's another conclusion that I've got.
Yep.
Is there is something, and I can't put that down to like narcissism or something because there's too many coincidences, there's too many red flags for me to just write it off and ignore it kind of thing. There is something watching out for me, me specifically.
Yep.
And I don't know what it is. I'm very grateful that it's there. The other thing is, what's its intention? Okay, am I supposed to do something, or am I supposed to, as I believe, just keep doing what I'm doing, and as long as I keep doing what I'm doing and what I think is right, this force, whatever it is, will always show up to protect me when I need it, so long as I keep thinking, so long as I keep doing the right thing, because I've noticed when I start doing the wrong thing, the protection goes away and I get in trouble.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. A Vietnam veteran, I told my story to him, and he said that when he was in Nam, he was walking in through the jungle, and he heard a distinct voice in the back of his head. He thought there was somebody close behind him telling him, "You're in danger, move to the left." And he looked behind him, there was nobody back there, but he did what the voice told him to do. And just then, the guy took a hit that was, you know, it was in line with where he was. And then when he fell to the ground, he fell in this hole, and as they were being shot at, he survived. And he said it was that voice. He couldn't explain what that weird voice came from, but it sounded like it was right behind him, but it was actually in the back of his head.
Mm-hmm.
Strange, huh?
Well, it happens so often, and this is why I think the whole idea of spirituality is definitely not dead, is very much alive. We have a caller in here. Kyle from Pennsylvania, I think. Kyle, are you there, mate?
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah. Hey, just kind of talking on the spirituality kick that we're on. About 3 years, I've always been kind of a spiritual person and believe that there's some sort of, ether or guiding force that puts you to where you're supposed to be. And about 3-4 years ago when I was in college, I had an opportunity to smoke a little DMT, which at the time I didn't really know what it was. But once I did that, and I don't condone, you know, using illicit drugs or anything, and I didn't do it for a high or whatever, but the sense of completeness and the sense of everything making sense. And it only lasted me for about, I'd say, 8 to 10 minutes, the actual experience, but it's something that I still hold with me today. And that sense of, you know, when you start talking about a guiding force or something talking to you or speaking to you or things like that, that for me at that time when I was under the influence of DMT, it made everything made sense, and I could see the entire world and spirituality and everything, how it was interconnected, and it was the most profound experience I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Yeah. I have had similar experiences when I've taken hallucinogens like that. In fact, it was I think it was mescaline when I was on Waiheke Island, just with a friend, and we were both at kind of odd ends in our lives. Like, I'd just gotten over being arrested for cannabis, and I'd just finished all my community service, and I'd injured my back doing vineyard work, and I was wondering what's next. And while we were tripping, I think about maybe 6 hours into it, I started to there was this bridge that opened through time, and I could see and speak to my future self. And he told me to get a job as a salesman. He told me to go back to university. He told me to move off of Waiheke Island and go to Auckland City. And those few life-changing things that I did, the job that I went to, the university, the place where I went to live, actually really messed up my life, actually damaged me, and I think irrecoverably. Like, I won't be able to ever forget or get over the damage that was done to me at university, at those jobs that I did, at that house where I lived. And yet, it's those things, those very, very terrible experiences that I went through as a result of my future self telling me to do it, that actually gave me all of the skills and all of the power that I needed to actually survive and thrive in an environment as hostile and terrifying and intellectually stimulating as the Truth Movement, as a radio show host or as a media activist or as a protester. All of those things I needed to be here. And I think that's what suffering really is, ladies and gentlemen. It's something we need to be strong. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose that sense of humor, you'll most likely go friggin' nuts. Walter Willis is my guest, and what I wanted to do, Walter, is you had that four pages. I think right now we've got a long segment, so let's read through as much of that as we can, because I'm prepared to listen.
No, oh, God help me. Okay, I'm going to go through it real quick. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a really strange life, Vinny. I can tell you what happened, what I've witnessed or heard or done.
If you've got the pages, there, let's just kind of get an audio recording of that, basically. And that way, what we can do is we can add it as a supplementary to your thing online. I'll cut a little audio clip for you, and you can put that on the website right next to the typed out version. How about that?
Okay, I'll do that. I'll give you a copy. You can put it on there. But here's what I want to tell people. I want to give you a little bit of warning, too, to the folks out there that think there's no black swans. There are black swans. There are bad things could happen. There's some bad things on. I feel some bad mojo coming. And in politics, this country here is really strange. To get reelected, you have to have a good economy going, or you have to have a crisis. And so the economy's not going good, so I'm afraid they may create a crisis to get reestablished as the next 4 years. That worries me, because I'm not sure what they would do to create what kind of crisis.
I don't know. If you look at America today, I think it's already been created.
Oh, yeah, I think there is, too. But I'm afraid they're going to do a pandemic and or something major like that would just wipe out a lot of people and solve a lot of their economic woes. And the pandemic, of course, would just destroy life in the cities, and that would get them out of the economic troubles. And I think that's what they would do. These people that are in charge, they don't care. They don't care about anything but power. Talk about narcissistic people. They're power-hungry, arrogant, elitist control freaks.
Well, there's an element to that that I'd like to actually affirm. All psychopaths, which are people who have no capacity for emotion outside of hatred and anger, things like that, they don't have love or camaraderie, things like that. They don't really have relationships in the sense that you and I would with our children or with our parents or something like that. The other, but all psychopaths are narcissistic, but not all narcissists are psychopaths.
That's a good point. That's a damn good point. And I'm glad you brought that up. And megalomaniacs fall in that category, too. Power hungry.
Okay. Well, exactly. It's all symptomology, you know, and the people who are the most dangerous people of all time, of all attributes, basically, are those psychopaths because they do not have a conscience.
That's right.
That's what makes them so dangerous.
I think you could attribute that to some of the people who ripped off in all that money in Wall Street, too.
We can. But we keep delaying, and we're trying to get through these four pages of words here.
Okay. I can't cover it all, but I can just give you some of the highlights of things that I think are really important for your listeners to hear.
Okay.
One of the things I'd like to bring up is an incident that happened in high school in science class. I had a science teacher, Mr. Cole, that he liked me. I scored like in the top 10% nationwide SATs in science, and I used to pick his brain. And during class and after class, I'd stay up with him to wash bottles, you know. One day, I don't know what made him say this, but he asked me, he says, what is the strongest force in the universe? And I said, fission. And I said, no, fusion. And he said, care to guess again? And I said, no, I can't think of anything stronger than fusion. And so I said, what is it? He says, it's electromagnetism. And I said, magnets? I says, why are we burning things to make things propel when we could use magnets? He says, it's not exactly magnets. And then he went on to describe that he was tasked with the job of building a new science lab at a new high school. And he would stay with friends that were working at Los Alamos science lab. And he also said that I had to keep this secret forever and ever, amen. This is back in the mid-60s. And I promised, and now I'm talking about it. I shouldn't be talking about it, but I think it's already out of the bag. The thing he told me next really shocked me. I said, how much stronger is it? You know, he said, it's 10 to the 34th power or something like that. And I stopped. I turned off my water. I looked at him, and he's smiling at me, like, you know. And I think, I says, you got to be kidding me. I says, you understand how big that number is over fusion? And he just kept smiling at me. And I said, how do you know this? How can you prove this? What is this all about? And so I had to keep promising I wouldn't say anything. And then he said, well, his friends were working, or relatives working at Los Alamos Lab on reverse alien technology. And he told me that it was a spinning hollow donut filled with like a plasma mercury spinning at 50 to 60,000 RPMs, and it reduced the gravitational pull of the Earth by like 89%, and he went berserk on me, and he said, and it produces enormous amounts of electrical energy. His eyes got big, rolled back in his head. I said, wait a minute, hold it, Mr. Cole. I says, how can you tell me that mercury can spin at 50 to 60,000 RPMs? Because mercury doesn't have any electrical induction that you can make it spin. And he said he didn't know how it worked. I said it had to be laced with something. And he goes on and tells me all these things about how it displaced time and inertia, didn't reduce inertia by the same amount. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's got to be hidden cameras somewhere because this can't be real alien technology that can do all these weird things. And this is from a guy who already saw aliens but thought they were ghosts. So anyway, back to the story of the technology. This is back in the 60s, Vinny. And then later, when I moved here to Idaho, a friend, after 10 years of knowing this guy, he comes out, after I told him my story here, he comes out and he says he saw a triangular-shaped craft come into vision like a Star Trek, you know, spacecraft would come out of warp drive, you know, and then become visible and float across the mountain behind me, right over the neighborhood. He said this thing was 2 football fields in size, and he even said it was like a Williamsburg blue paint, like a blue-gray paint on the bottom. And he's a pilot, and he works for, you know, aero technology people. So he knows what he's talking about, and he knows that it hovered across for about 10 seconds and took off again, almost disappeared. It took off so fast. If they had that technology back in the 60s that could levitate, if you want to call it levitate, with a hovering anti-gravity drive system back in the 60s, then they must have something out there back in 1999 that's workable.
Well, they must have an untold stuff at their disposal today.
Yeah. It's strange. I mean, these are strange stories, I'm telling you. And
well, the thing is, I've heard them before from many, many people about different incidents, different times, different places. People who have no affiliation with you whatsoever, or this person of which you speak.
Really?
Okay.
You heard the same thing before from others.
Well, yeah. The exact same thing about censored technology being available back then. The work of Dr. Bill Deagle supports this when he was a doctor working for the NSA doing a whole bunch of computer code and things like that. He you know those Pentium 2 processors that they bought out maybe about 10 years ago or something like that?
Yeah.
They started fueling all the new players. They're the greatest processors ever, you know. There's 2 cores in there. And he saw one of those sitting on the desk of one of his colleagues in, I think it was 68, 67?
Really? I didn't know that.
You know? And Stan Deo, sorry, go ahead.
That's a long time ago, too, 1960s.
Mm-hmm. And the Lear Corporation, you know Lear Jets, right?
Yeah, the Lear Jets.
In Stan Deo's book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, he details how the Lear Corporation were actually experimenting with disks and gravitic drives and propulsion precisely as you described in big warehouses.
What year was that, Benny?
This was in the 40s, I think. It was either late 30s or early 40s, like way back in the day.
Really?
So basically what you described is you saw one of the working prototypes of stuff that they began work on many, many years before.
Wow. Now, see, you would think that they could keep the secret, but it's leaking out. But they're never going to actually come out and say, yeah, it's true. They're not allowed to talk like that.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not until it's time. And what Wernher von Braun said, he was the former head of NASA. He was a German recruited from under Operation Paperclip from Nazi Germany. He was the designer of the V2 rockets that they launched at England, stuff like that. Incredible propulsion systems and stunning accuracy for the time. And so naturally, the US thinks, man, this guy's incredibly good at creating very sophisticated aircraft and stuff. So let's get him on the space program. Sure enough, he heads it. And his assistant comes out not too long ago and discloses that he'd told her about 3 wars that humanity would fight in the future. The first war would be what he called a silent war, which turned out, of course, the Cold War with Russia. The next war after that would be a war against an enemy that didn't exist, or a war on terrorism. We've got that. And the last and final war that would bring everybody together and create the world government would be one against an enemy outside of this world, okay,
wow.
Whether real or manufactured.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... And here's the problem. If you're an alien, okay, let's pretend just for a second that you're an alien and you're visiting Earth and you have all these super abilities that, you know, defy logic as far as our physics know. You'd want to have one voice to talk to if you were trying to talk and negotiate with planet Earth. So the one world order thing is probably alien induced.
Well, there is a lot of talk about that on the part of David Wilcock about off-world entities that are supposedly helping us along, and indeed not just a week or more ago. What was his name? We had another abductee on, John Walls. There we are, John Walls. And he was on 2020. And he's been abducted several times, and through under hypnosis, his memory of the abductions was able to be kind of transcribed and talked about, and his friends written this book about it. And he has also said that there are some of the aliens that are here to help the baddies, the New World Order side, okay. And there are some that are here to help and guide us.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's a soft touch, so you've got to make sure that, of course, if you're doing your job right, nobody will be sure that you're doing anything at all.
Yeah, and that's probably the way they are using people to get the job done.
Does this seem like a sort of like a secret spiritual war between angels and demons type complex, just like in the movie Constantine to you?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking the same thing.
And also, there's been other cases from people who've suffered that sleep paralysis when they've been visited in their beds by greys and things like that. People have had it happen several times. I read this in Uncensored magazine. I haven't confirmed it. I don't know the validity, but I thought it was interesting nonetheless that they had no possibility of getting these the sleep paralysis off or getting these aliens to leave them alone or anything like that. They would yell at them. They would scream. They would curse at the wind. And then one person said the word Jesus, and these greys went, and went, just evaporated, dematerialized, and buggered off.
Good. That's nice to know. I'll remember that one.
Yeah. It gave rise to speculation of this person that there might be a demonic element to the alien presence, that they're... You know how we talk about dimensions, right? Like one dimension, two dimensions, three dimensions, four, five dimensions, six dimensions, seven dimensions, eight, so on and so forth. However many dimensions there are, I'm only capable of really perceiving in three right here, right now, and possibly having tapping into the fourth dimension, which is time, so I'm capable of perceiving and living through that. Fifth dimensionally, maybe extrasensory perception of some description, we've kind of connoted that we've got elements of that within us, but there are dimensions beyond that as well that are both material and immaterial, I believe, that we are not yet capable of 100% perceiving, that I believe other species may have been developed the capacity to travel in between them and perhaps use them as gateways into other dimensions. So in essence, it's not entirely demonic or anything like that, but even in, say, fantasy, there would be certain magic spell words that are just words, but they have an amazing power to them. Maybe that is what is actually at the source of some of this here. So I don't know. It's all theoretical, basically, until you can prove it one way or the other. That's all it is some interesting bit of information you heard on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, of which we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
The way it's going to be. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with God. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with God.
Curtis. Also, if you have not done it yet, if you are an activist or a radio show host or a website runner or any part of the alternative media whatsoever, and you want to be mentored doing a little bit more, or you want access to more resources, you want to have more training, or have a conversation and get ideas, contact me, okay? I try to help everybody that I can, even if they don't really deserve it, because I find if you're pushing out the help, okay? I noticed after listening to American Talk Radio and the Patriot Movement for a year or two, before deciding to go out and do something about it, because I realized that there was nothing of equivalent stature here in New Zealand at all, of any kind. So I noticed that problem, ergo, the onus was on me to go and solve it because I'm the only one who figured it out. Same as you. And it's called the University of Gittenschieden. Okay? It's in Germany somewhere, I think. You just go out there and do it. Start helping people. Even if they don't ask for it, just help them. Give them some coverage. Just find those people that have the megaphones, have the microphones, have the books, have the websites, blah, 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 blah. Just interview them and put them up on your website, put them up on your YouTube channel, put them up on your audio archives. Just create content daily, every day. And before you know it, you'll be like me, and in 4 years, I now have more YouTube subscribers than New Zealand Herald, which is the New York Times of New Zealand. Me, Vinnie Eastwood, by myself, have done that. And the entire New Zealand Herald, with its 100-some-odd million-dollar budget, cannot compete with me. Do you understand, ladies and gentlemen, what happens when you stop asking for help and you start helping yourself? Stop going to these mainstream media and asking them to report on chemtrails. Take a camera, get out there, start a YouTube channel, even if it's your first video and it's the crappiest thing you've ever seen in your life. You just accomplished a hell of a lot more than all of those people who would comment on your YouTube channels telling you what you missed and how you should improve, because those people haven't done a fracking thing at all. Walt Willis is my guest. Welcome back.
Hey, Ben, how you doing?
I don't know. I'm feeling very in tune today.
Well, can I tell you one more thing? You just said something that resonates with me. I told my cousin Jerry the story of these strange events in my life about aliens and stuff, and she went silent on the phone for about maybe 10 seconds. And I said, "You still there, Jerry?" And she said, "Yeah, I was here, but why did you tell me that?" And she said, "I never told you this, but back when we were having a barbecue, my son and I were in the backyard, and we didn't have any rolls, and my husband and Sonny went to the grocery store to get rolls. And as we were cooking, a flying saucer flew over top of my neighborhood, right real close. And my son and I saw that. And when Sonny came home, she said to him, 'Sonny, you ain't going to believe what we just saw.' And he said, 'A flying saucer? Everybody in the shopping center parking lot saw it.' And I asked her, I said, 'Jerry, did you tell the newspaper or the police or anybody what you saw?' He said, 'No, I was waiting to see it in the newspaper or the TV or hear it on the radio.' And I said, 'Why would you do that?' She said, 'Well, surely someone would have, you know, reported it.' No one did. It was not on the radio. It was not on TV. It was not in the newspaper. Nobody said anything. Why?
Because we all leave it up to other people. We think that basically, we forget that how important we are right here, right now, in almost every way that matters. You're very important. You could say something, do something that could change the course of history just because you were there at that particular moment. That's how important our existence is, I think. That's my philosophy on it anyway. I could conceivably sit around, see horrible things, and say nothing. And accomplish nothing. But I can't. Yeah, notably because I'm not the same person I once was. Perhaps there was once a time where I could have done that. I could have rationalized away the importance of myself and what I'm capable of doing as a human being with free will. But I can't do that anymore. Something's changed.
Well, you know the old cliche, the first casualty of every war has always been the truth. And if we sit on our hands and cover our mouths and cover our ears and eyes and not speak the truth, we will be at war again.
I think you're right. Have you ever been in a political meeting where an incredibly tough question is asked of the political candidate who previously had the room in the palm of his hand, and then all of a sudden, one question, so penetrating, so damaging, he can't answer it, and all of a sudden, the whole crowd, manipulated and brainwashed as they were up until that point, suddenly there's nothing there. That is what one truth can do. It can shatter a thousand lies.
Mm-hmm. I know. I've been in many situations like that, and boy, you can hear a pin drop at some of the places I ask questions. I'm the same kind of person. You know, I believe in the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I like science. I like truth. I like God. And I want to see us survive as a people and not be sheeple, not be led around like we have a ring in our nose.
I don't want to be a cat. That was another thing that occurred to me. We told you earlier in the thing, I was kind of like, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. I also don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be cattle. I want to have my freedom, and I want to have my liberty. And I think the whole reason why I was afraid of death is because I realized that I may die in defense of them.
Yeah, that'd be a horrible thought, to leave your kids behind with the big mess that we never spoke up.
Think about that. Like, a soldier goes to war, right, to defend freedom, etc. Allegedly, this is what we get told. But in either case, it's always resource extraction or some other plant of the New World Order scheme just getting slightly worse and using your body bag as one of the building blocks in the wall to destroy and encapsulate the entire human race in a world government, right? That's what it really is.
Right.
Just think about this. And it's a line from, I think, Transformers 3, ironically enough. Do you think we'd rather have my brother back, or do you think we'd rather have his medals?
Mm. Yeah.
Human life, when it exists, is far more valuable than any symbol of life, I think. Let's say Jesus was alive today and there were no crucifixes all over the place. Do you think Jesus would actually be more powerful than some little than pieces of wood that are stuck together all over the world? I think he probably would be, because those pieces of wood don't accomplish anything unless you try and build something out of them.
Yeah. I think Christ was sent here for a reason, and he was very successful.
And he accomplished a lot more in life than he did in death, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and then sacrificing himself for what he believed, and people witnessed it, and they saw what he was. It became so apparent that this guy was telling you to stop doing what you're doing and start thinking differently.
I always found that really strange, though, because if you've already accomplished so much in life, why end it prematurely when you can at least double, triple, quadruple the amount of effect you have with only a few more years? I mean, he could have. Let's talk about that whole revolutionary aspect that everybody wants to talk about. We all want to see a revolution. It's like people forget that the word revolution just means to go in a circle. You know, then nothing really changes with revolutions. It's more of the same. You knock over a tyranny that existed, and then you replace it with something that's freer, which eventually gets taken over by tyranny, which eventually gets knocked over by a revolution again. We don't get anywhere. And it's perennial. Okay. Corruption, human suffering, scumbaggery, as I like to call it, you know, the actions, portents, and the attitudes of a scumbag. Those things are littered throughout history, kind of like a highway is littered with trash. It's everywhere you look. And instead of going and picking up all of that trash, cleaning up the highway, we need to learn that this highway's behind us. And we've got to make sure that the path and the road that we're building now for the future generations isn't littered with all that crap, okay? But people need to be aware of the road behind them in order to make sure that the road in front of them isn't exactly the same. That's why I think history has been reduced from corruption, conspiracy, and assassination to dates, figures, and individual rulers. They've taken the people, they've taken the personality, and they've taken the importance out of the teachings of history. And now, the least popular subject in America is history. And it's arguably the most important subject in the world.
You know, you hit a nerve right there when you said that, because I got a question for you. I hate to do that to you, but I got a question for you. You know, it's like a life, a birth, and a death, what we see in high cultures. And I'm not sure what stage we're in. And what would you predict? And what was your best, having observed what you've observed and keeping your eyes open, what would your best guess be for the next couple of years in the United States as far as politics and peace and quiet? And, you know,
I don't know. Honestly, those are my three favorite words. I don't know. My three least favorite words, on the other hand, are I don't care. Yeah. I do care what the future holds, but I'm not 100% sure. There's possibilities. Okay, it's kind of like in that movie V for Vendetta. Yeah. Do you think your revolution's going to be successful? He says there's no certainty, only opportunity. And in the last 2 weeks, my girlfriend, who's always been very kind of psychically connected, always been able to see things before they happen. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, she can't see anything.
Uh-oh.
She can't see anything at all. The Webbot program by Mr. Cliff High, which has been trawling the internet and been making pretty amazingly strange linguistic predictions of the future with stunning accuracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer returning any information.
Uh-oh.
It's as if there's nothing there anymore.
Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good.
And what the Webbot program was, he essentially described the Webbot program, or at least this is my take on it, as a kind of like a psychic dipstick. You dip it into the internet, and everybody's latent psychic energy and everything just comes across somehow in the code that everybody's typing in. All the information that's on the internet is in some way a reflection of how we're all truly feeling at a subconscious level. And the Webbot takes all of that and puts it together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that tells me is that the future is absolutely uncertain, which means that the time of opportunity is at a critical juncture, which is why my this year, 2012, I had this guy talk to me yesterday saying, oh, you're going to die in 2012, we're all going to die, Jesus is going to return, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, blah, 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 the seas are going to go up.
Yep.
Okay, I've heard just as many arguments for that, just as much evidence for that as against it.
Yeah,
I'm voting against it. Because every time when I've ever heard anybody from official sources or unofficial sources say that everything's going down and we're all screwed and blah, 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 it's the end of all world and all time, that person's only out to basically get the last of your money, okay, because you believe so wholeheartedly, or mm-hmm. get the last of your belief, or usurp the last of your power, or take the last of your... basically, a big fracking psyop. To distract you, make you think that there's no point doing anything, and to stop you from fulfilling your potential so that they can take everything from you at that point regardless. And had you done something today, had you realized that you were being tricked, you could have stopped the end.
Yeah, they tend to bank on people's fears.
Anybody who's preaching fear,
mm-hmm.
big finger, okay? That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to give you a big finger. You start preaching fear to me, mate, I'll tell you what. I ain't afraid, okay? I don't want to die, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let the fear of dying tomorrow ruin today. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
We'll be right back after the break of the MiniEastwardShow.com final segment coming up with Walt Willis. Think, Walter, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide.
You got this the right music point. There, Vinny.
Well, thank you. And and you might actually remember that. Do you remember seeing the Robin Williams film Good Morning Vietnam?
Oh, yeah. Robin Williams, yep.
That was the first song he played on that film. And, yeah, I just thought about it. You're listening to that. You're in Vietnam. You're sweating. You're in the jungle, and you're listening to Nowhere to Run, Nowhere to Hide.
Yeah.
What a bastard.
There's a lot of good songs that came out of the 60s under the great stress of impending doom.
And have you noticed that that is where we become the most powerful? It's basically, you don't realize how strong you are until something tries to break you and can't.
Yeah, fear. Vinny, fear is a very good motivator.
Yeah. Well, fear, as long as you do something about it. What was the difference? Anger and depression come from the same fear, except depression lacks motivation.
You know, I was going to say that to you earlier when you were talking, and there's other things to consider, too. Basically, fundamentally speaking, there are basic two types of people, one who live in fear-based and one that live in love-based. And I choose to live in a loved-based environment.
Yeah. And the way that you do that, I think it's kind of like transmitting, essentially. Let's say, for instance, I'm Vinny Eastwood. I'm a biological transceiver, and I'm constantly sending out all these messages like Morse code. Expose, come back, screw David Rockefeller, and it's all very positive and happy and exposing scumbaggery and helping people who are nice and trying to develop new ideas and have genuine intellectual discussions. We actually learn something about the world. And as a direct result, people who do that exact same thing as I do gravitate towards me like magnetism.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, another thing, too, is your subconscious is much more powerful thoughts than you realize. And most people don't realize that how they verbalize and think of themselves and other people gets stored into a massive, massive hard drive in their brain called subconscious. And so our thoughts are very powerful, and we need to think positive and keep those positive thoughts of love and happiness and goodwill and helpfulness in our forefront of our mind, so that at the end of the day when we go to lay our head down on a pillow, they get built up in that area called the hard drive.
Your hard drive, I think, is an interesting thing because you can also wipe hard drives, but it's even if you wipe your hard drives, you can still get the some of the information back on them. It's almost like it's impossible to wipe them completely because somebody with that recovery skill can always do that. And that's like the deep, deep subconscious, because mm-hmm. you can get into your subconscious by, meditation or basically even if you just keep talking to people about these things that really deeply occur to you and keep expanding on them, eventually you start opening up that sort of cave of your unconscious and you start to come to terms, and they no longer become subconscious, they become part of your conscious recognition and your self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of it is those other things that are down there that are so deep buried that they can never be gotten rid of. What is that? Because we had a conversation with Anthony Peake, who's written books about the science of life and death and deja vu and what have you, and I came up with the idea that when you've got all this information in there, it's like the cloud. Okay, have you ever heard of the cloud? You've got iPhones and iPads, and when you change your calendar on your iPhone, it changes on your iPad automatically because they're connected. There's a wireless field up there where all the information is stored together, and only when you need it is it downloaded.
Yeah.
They cut off parts of the brains of mice or rats, sorry, and sent them through a maze. And no matter how much of their brain they cut off, the rats still remember the way through the maze.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So our memories and what makes us aren't actually up here in the brain. They're not even in here in our hearts. It's actually out there. It's all around. Who we are is all around us at all times. We are who we choose to associate with. We are what we put in our body.
And,
we are what we say. We are what we do.
Yep. You know, I heard it explained even more deep, expressed more so in the fact that the brain and the mind are similar but not the same. The mind is all your nervous system and your whole body, including the brain, is your mind.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to me. The brain is simply a connection of your nervous system. Your nervous system is all connected.
It was the brain, the mind, and the soul, I think were the three separate elements that people believe was the composition of what it is to be human.
And that's what we really are. That's a true sense of self, when you understand that we are more than physical.
And I pity those people who have no deeper spiritual understanding or no belief or no faith or anything like that, because it's almost like a baby cutting its own umbilical cord when it's only gestated for like 6 months.
That's,
you know?
That's a good way to express that. That's an excellent way to express that.
You have no maturity. You have no connection to the thing that bore you, and it's inherent. Do you think maybe the word ungrateful springs to mind? To not have any faith or not have any belief, to not have any desire to do good, I think is an inherently ungrateful and selfish act at the gift of life. It's like being given an amazing Christmas present by a mother who loves you very much.
Yeah.
And throwing it in the bin the next day.
Or maybe they simply lack a soul. I don't know.
Well, maybe the New World Order has been working hand over fist since the days of Darwin, since the days of Jesus, to corrupt, steal, and destroy men's souls for their own ends.
Yeah, it's sad, I'll tell you. And to think that the average person hasn't gotten in touch with that idea is kind of frightening to me.
Many have. And I found whenever you try to focus on anything, that's what comes back to you. Like, for instance, if your focus is nobody gets it, everybody's an idiot, it's frightening to me that people don't understand. While true, it connotes a certain worldview, a negative one.
Yeah.
However, and it doesn't mean that if you think positively, that thing doesn't exist, like the New Agers believe. Like, yes, if I meditate so well, you know, bullets won't go through my head when a black uniform thing comes up, and I can just pray to the goddess and burn some sage, and it'll make me bulletproof. Kind of perception is reality type Luciferian BS. No,
yeah.
No, mate. Okay, life and dimensions are simultaneous. They all have relevance, okay?
Yep.
One does not have precedence over the other, per se. They all coexist, okay? So if somebody shoots you in the 3D, you're going to feel it, okay, in the 3D.
Yeah.
Just as if somebody shoots you in the 4D with a psychic experimental laser beam or something like that deep into your pineal gland, you'll feel that too.
Yeah.
These things are all there for a reason. Experiencing life, for frack's sake. Don't close yourself off from it, any of its elements.
Well, Vinny, you know, it's been a great time talking to you with such insight. I never thought you would have that much insight as to the human condition.
Well, let's just say I'm a conditioned human.
Yeah, you are. You are conditioned, and you definitely understand. I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. See, and there's the narcissism again, because people always reinforce it, because there's a reason I love myself, because I am pretty awesome. I'm a really nice guy. I do lots of cool stuff. I say lots of real awesome stuff that means stuff to people.
Yeah, okay. You've got a lot of insight. And I want it's to amazing thank you, Vinny. I want to thank you for allowing me to share these 2 hours with you on your network. And I appreciate the American Freedom Network for allowing us to be here. And I'll send you that information, too, before we cut off the air here. There's like 4 pages. I'll be happy to send it to you.
Yeah, just email me that as a file attachment, and I'll upload it with the audio archives, because I'm cognizant that we didn't actually go into reading all 4 pages of that. Do you have a website of some kind? We've only got about maybe 20 seconds in the broadcast left.
No, I don't, but I will send it to you in a file attachment, and I think you're going to be surprised.
Okay. All right. Walter Willis, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, sir, for your time. And I've really enjoyed this too. It's sometimes in expressing how you feel, you begin to understand more about it. And all you really need at that time is somebody to be there and listen and be a bouncing board, if you will. And thank you, Walter, because I feel much better. Having had you on with me for these 2 hours. The archives will be uploaded to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen, homepage, and also the 2012 archives, as well as Guerrilla Media, as well as the YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media. It'll be posted on our Twitter feed, Guerrilla Media, and on my Facebook. It's going to be all over the place. So if you cannot find this, I will be very, very disappointed in you. We'll be back some other time, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow, I believe, we're going to have... I don't know. We'll find out. I think James Corbett and Jay Soley.